recently gave a webinar for MBA applicants on how to choose schools. The truth, however, is that the general principles I gave then apply to most, if not all, graduate studies, and I'm going to discuss just those principles in just a second. Hello, I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast, Admission Straight Talk. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. Before I get to the subject of today's podcast, I want to invite you to attend a couple of webinars we will be holding next week. I'll link the webinars from the show notes at info.accepted.com/58. The first webinar is a Q&A for medical school applicants. Yes, it's that time of year when pre-meds have lots of questions, and we're going to do our best to answer them on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern. Then on Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, I'm presenting That GMAT Score, Implications for Your MBA Application, a live webinar. I'll bust a few GMAT myths and address who should retake and when the GMAT. We'll also have plenty of time for Q&A in that webinar. Please join me. I'd love to meet with you, chat with you, and hopefully help you via the webinar. Now, in the webinar I gave a few weeks ago, The Secrets to MBA Acceptance, I pointed really to two secrets of MBA acceptance. Applying to the right schools is number one, and presenting your qualifications effectively. I'm not going to deal with number two at all right now, and it was presenting your qualification. What I'm going to do in today's podcast, I'm going to focus on number one, applying to the right schools. Yes, folks, this is going to be one of those podcasts where I'm just going to be presenting. We don't have a guest today. And we're going to focus on applying to the right schools because I feel that if you apply the wrong school, you just are simply unlikely to get accepted. That's the best thing that can happen, actually. The right schools are those, and this is a very important definition, that support your goals, that's A, and B, are likely to accept you. If you apply to programs that only support your goals and are unlikely to accept you, then you are very likely to get rejected. If you ignore A, the goals part of that equation, and focus on B, only those likely to accept you, then you could apply to an entirely wrong program, a completely inappropriate program for you, or at least a less than optimal one. In either case, you've just made a terribly time-consuming and equally expensive mistake. So, at Accepted, we've developed what I like to call the Accepted Positioning System, the APS. And it's a four-step process. Now, before we go there, I'd like you to think for a minute, play a little mind game with me before we go and discuss the APS. If you were going to take a trip, what is the first item of information you need to know? Just think about that a second. I'll tell you. You need to know your destination. And that's exactly what you need to, what you've put in. And if you have a GPS, the GPS knows where you're at. You know where you're at. At least you should. And you put into your GPS your destination, the address, and it tells you how to go. It tells you the quickest, fastest, surest way to get there. Well, the APS kind of works like Waze. And it is a four-step process, not quite as simple as Waze or as user-friendly or as easy. It's a lot more difficult than Waze. But it still starts with the destination, and that destination is your post-degree goal. In other words, the starting place for a successful graduate school application is the post-degree goal, what you want to do afterwards. A graduate education is always a means to an end, unless you are one of those few people who can afford a graduate education just for the sheer joy of learning. There are some, and if so, you can learn for the joy of learning, just for the benefit of the knowledge. But that's certainly a smaller and smaller minority, unless you have some parents who are paying for the education. The starting place isn't your past experience, it isn't your ethnic background, and it isn't even your academic stats, so they're certainly important later on in the process. And I have to emphasize that the importance of this post-degree goal, the sense of purpose to your entire education and your application process, is one of the key differences between undergrad and graduate, or most grad admissions processes. Now, here are the four basic steps. One, determine your post-degree professional goal. That's the first step, and we're going to go more slowly through the remaining three. Again, begin with the end in mind. What do you want to do after you finish education that you can't do without this degree, or you're at least unlikely to be able to do without this degree? So, for example, if you currently are a lab technician and you want to become a physician or a physician's assistant or any other number of careers in clinical practice of medicine, you're going to need to go to the appropriate program. If you want to become a physician, you have to go to allopathic or osteopathic medical school. If you want to become an investment banker and you are currently a software developer, you probably have to go to business school. If you want to practice law, you need to go to law school. So you need a goal that requires the education provided. If you want to become a tenure-track professor, then you probably need a PhD. In all cases, or certainly for business school, this may be a little bit more general for some of the other specialties, you're going to need something that you want to do in an industry in which you want to do it. A focused goal defined as industry and function is mandatory for business school. Again, it's not quite as important for the other graduate specialties. There you can usually be a little bit more general, but even in academia, it's becoming more and more important that you have a post-degree goal. And indeed, in academia, what you're going to write is a statement of purpose. And the statement of purpose is supposed to outline what you want to do during your graduate studies and how you're going to apply that research, that education, after your studies. Having this kind of goal shows direction. Now, for most of you, you're not, the overwhelming majority are in some way or another going to be career changers, unless you're going straight from undergrad to a graduate program, in which case, even then, you hope to change from being a student or flipping hamburgers to being a professional or being an academician. And you're going to want to show the relevance of your past experience, whatever it's been, whether it's volunteer or professional experience, to your future goals. So, as you're thinking about applying, also be thinking of showing how that past experience that you've had is going to enhance your ability to perform in the career that you'd like to do in the future. Sometimes you're going to have a radical career change. We have on our blog right now an interview with somebody who was a career tennis player, a ranked tennis player rather, and is now switching into investment management. I recently, in a completely different interview, podcast for Emerson Straight Talk, talked to Grace Cutney of Sweet Careers, and she told us about a client of hers who had been a concert pianist, hurt his hands, and had to, I think as a junior in college, change his career path. And he just examined what he had done, what he was good at, and he too decided that he wanted to go into investment banking, I think, or some form of financial services. And she articulated a very cogent argument that he made for the relevance of his concert pianist background. So that's something that you have to be able to do. What if your goal is fuzzy at this point? Then you need to clarify it. Very simple. You need to research professional options to clarify what you want to do, just as you would do if you were going on a vacation or a journey. Again, this is the accepted positioning system. The metaphor is the geographic positioning system. And you want to perform the same process. Now, if you were going on a journey, you'd probably get on the internet and you'd do some research. You would talk to friends who vacationed recently and ask them what they really enjoyed, what they thought was worthwhile. You talk to your friends. You might view some blogs or read some articles. And you want to go through some of the same process here. Some of you might be thinking, I want to figure out my goal when I'm in grad school. That is really a bad idea. Again, you could spend a lot of time and money pursuing an education that ends you, puts you in a place that you don't want to be, or prepares you for a profession you don't want to pursue. So you're much better off doing that research ahead of time. Furthermore, many programs, obviously I've mentioned most business schools, want to see that direction and view it as much as a qualification as good test scores, high GPA, or really impressive volunteer work or career progression. Now, some programs, medical schools in particular, they're okay with a more general direction. And law schools are still okay with a more general direction, but they do want to see that you need a legal degree. Medical schools, they want to know that you've had clinical exposure so that your physician admissions are based on personal experience and not romantic notions drawn from television or childhood memories. Business schools really want to see, as I mentioned earlier, that your experience is going to be relevant, that they're going to be able to place you when you graduate. They want happy graduates, as do actually all graduate schools. You can modify your plans as time goes on, and you should be flexible and open to opportunities as they come and obviously to changes in the marketplace, which you really can't control. But there's a big difference between having direction but being flexible and having no direction and applying clueless about what you want to do with a degree. The former, I think, is a really effective approach. The latter basically means you're going to be lost and flounder. Now, it's, I think, a very good quote in a consortium chat that I moderated and accepted. Washington Owens MBA admissions director, Evan Buffett, said, and I'm quoting, "We really want you to craft a good argument for yourself that goes something like this. Here's who I've been so far in my life professionally and maybe even personally. This is where I want to go, and this is how the MBA is going to get me there." Now, that's for the MBA, but that kind of logic is exactly what you're going to want to do, whether you're applying to or be prepared to present, whether you're applying to an academic degree program, law school, medical school, any graduate program. This is where I am. This is where I want to go, and this is how this program is going to help me get there. In some sciences, that especially in fields that where graduates are very much in demand, I will grant you that a clear post-professional goal may not be as critical, but they will still be much happier to know that you've been able to reason out a logical career path for yourself, that you know what you want to research and with whom. There's a reason that the essay for most academic programs is called a statement of purpose. You're supposed to have a purpose. I once met with a friend's daughter, one of my closest friend's daughter, who was applying to graduate school, and she was having a terrible time writing her statement of purpose. And I asked her, "What do you want to do with a degree?" And she responded, "I don't know." And I said, "Well, how do you want to write a statement of purpose when you don't have a purpose?" And she says, "Again, I don't know how to write it." And I said, "Well, I think the first thing you need to do is develop that purpose." So, again, whatever direction you want to go in for your graduate studies, both from an admissions perspective and from a personal perspective, you're going to be investing a lot of time, a lot of money. You should have a purpose to your studies. Why is it important from an admissions perspective? Because most graduate programs, not all, but most, want to know they can help you succeed. This is particularly important for business school. It's becoming more so for law schools and even for PhD programs, which I think have, in many cases, thrown their graduates under the bus. The implosion of the legal market and the academic tenure track market is causing a bit of a revolution in both fields, where they don't want to be admitting people that will never get jobs and will just be saddled with, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of debt. So, and you don't want to be saddled with tens of thousands of dollars of debt if you can't make the money back. So you need to have a goal that will be your criteria for success in terms of your graduate education and for achieving the purpose of your studies. I hope I've convinced you that your goals should guide you in terms of school choice. However, clear goals will help you when you arrive on campus too. There are so many opportunities and ways to spend your time on a good university campus that you really need to know what are your priorities. And your priorities should be established by the purpose of your studies. So if you are pursuing a PhD, and you want to keep yourself open to non-academic opportunities, which you probably should, again, given the tenure track market, and perhaps you're considering consulting, then you may want to make sure that you organize conferences where you certainly participate actively in conferences, or you take leadership roles that you demonstrate leadership and organizational ability. And this is, of course, true in many, many fields. I picked PhDs because again, that job market is particularly weak at the moment. For MBAs, internships are critical, and internship recruiting starts within weeks, if not days, of your arrival on campus. So you need to you need focus and direction when you land at your dream program. It's only 2 years, so that you can hit the ground running for the internship search, because a good internship frequently leads to a good full-time job. And again, these goals will help you determine where to invest your time and energy in extracurricular activities, as well as which classes to choose. So if your goals are fuzzy or non-existent, then you have to clarify them. How should you clarify your goals? Well, again, going with the trip analogy, the trip metaphor, analyze first what you like. Where have you gone and enjoyed? Where have you traveled and had a blast? And in terms of your professional goals, analyze deeply what you've done and liked and what you have done and disliked. Don't limit yourself to work. Examine extracurricular activities and community service, too. Talk to mentors and people whose judgment you trust. Request informational interviews from people in positions that you believe appeal to you. Ask them, what did you like? What did you dislike about? What do you dislike about your job? Ask if they have or if they value people with the education that you are about to pursue. And ask them for educational recommendations regarding degree, the school, classes. And last point before we move on, if you have a societal goal, by all means, you can mention it, you can pursue it. Okay, step one of the accepted positioning system means that you have a clear goal. Which schools will help you achieve it? That's step two of the APS. Researching the schools. So what should you look for? That's the first question. What should you look for in school? You want to look at what the school offers. First of all, where do grads get jobs? Check the school's employment reports. Certainly business schools have these kinds of reports. For medical school, you're going to want to see what kind of residency programs graduates go into. For law schools, again, the schools are starting to come out with more data in terms of where their grads go. Are they getting jobs that are full-time, or are they getting contract positions? Are they getting jobs requiring the bar? These kinds of things, are they going to big law? Are they going to smaller firms? All these, this kinds of things, this kind of data is information that you need in order to choose whether you want to apply to a particular school. Yes, keep your qualifications in mind. We're going to get to those in a second. But what you want to see is the school going to help you to achieve your goal? Don't rely exclusively on the employment reports. Also talk to recent alumni and current students. That's number one, recruiting placement. Number two, curriculum. What are you going to study, and how does the school teach it? Are the classes and special programs that are going to take you in the direction you think you want to go? Are there certificates, concentrations, immersions? Is the style of teaching what you want? Are there professors doing the kind of research that really, really intrigue you and attract you? That's critical if you're pursuing an academic degree. And what approach appeals to you? In business, you have the case method, you have experiential learning, you have classic lecture. In medical school, there are different approaches to teaching medicine, systems-based, problem-based. You know, law school is still pretty much case method, but again, you should look and see what are your options and what does a school provide and what do you think is going to be the best method for you. Finally, what about extracurricular activities? Are there clubs and activities related to your specific interests and goals? Competitions, conferences, active student groups. Don't just look at the list of student groups. Make sure that they are active. If you're in business school and you're not going to be close to the area where you want to work, does this business school or the law school or the whatever organize treks and facilitate your visiting the part of the country or the world that you're going to want to work? Are there overseas study opportunities if those are important to you? And then there are simple personal preferences that relate to location, student body makeup, needs of a significant other and family, and, of course, cost. Be honest with yourself. How important is it to you that there be a lot of people like you, whatever is important to you in yourself, and whether it's ethnicity, religious identification, political affiliation, or do you want to stretch and move out of that comfort zone that we all tend to occupy? And how do you go about researching schools? Start with the easy steps that you can take. If many fields have specialty rankings, certainly U.S. News has those for the professional areas. Explore thoroughly the websites of the schools that support your goals, keeping in mind your qualifications, which we will examine more closely in a minute. Talk to current students and alumni. Attend, you know, fairs. Certainly there's the MBA fairs. There are law school fairs. Sometimes medical schools visit colleges and universities. Read student blogs. We recently posted several posts on MBA programs that send the most grads into consulting, into entrepreneurship, and into financial services. And I'll link to these posts. And what we did there wasn't super-duper complicated research. We simply went to U.S. News, and we took the numbers of graduates that went into for the consulting and the financial services. For entrepreneurship, it was a little different. For consulting and entrepreneurship and financial services, we took the total, the number of people that went into that specific area, let's say consulting, and we ranked them by total numbers going into the field. And then we ranked the schools by the percentage of graduates going into a specific field. And I think that gives schools, smaller schools, a chance and allows you to see perhaps some hidden gems that would otherwise be missing. I'm not saying you should stop with that research. I would still go further. I would go and look at specific employment reports. I would try and get a better sense of how a school does in your specific area, your niche, if you will, because financial services or consulting is very broad. But that's the kind of research that you should be doing, not relying on generic rankings and averages. You should be looking at what's specifically of interest to you. High placement in your area of interest, in the case of these blog posts, would indicate placement strength in those specific areas, as well as curricular strength and extracurricular strength. Rather than rely on, again, the generic rankings, this kind of analysis for your particular goal can really help you decide where to apply. You want to attend schools with a placement, and that could be an additional degree or a specific career path record that will launch you on your desired path. Okay? If they've done it before, in this respect, actually, your process and the school's process, to a certain extent, are mirror images. The schools want to see that you've achieved in the past, you've contributed to community in the past, so then they will believe that you'll do so when you're part of their community and then you're on their campus. And you want to see that the school has a track record of placement in the direction that you want to go, because if people have done it in the past, there's likely greater likelihood that you can do it in the, that you can do it in the future. Again, the past predicts, past behavior tends to predict future behavior. All right. Now you should be narrowing your list, right? And I would suggest that you should visit the schools that you are really serious about. The best time to visit is when class is in session, so you can sit on a class. If that's not possible, make sure you go where there's an information session so you can ask questions and get information. If students are around, talk to them when you visit. If they're not, talk to them at information sessions or ask the school to connect you to students, perhaps from your country or your area. Sometimes people ask if they should visit before they apply or only when invited to interview. Visiting before you apply will give you insight and perspective that will help you decide whether to apply and how to answer any why this school questions. However, it may not be practical or economically feasible. I know many medical school applicants, it doesn't make sense. You're applying to way too many schools, and you're going to visit when you interview. And besides, you may end up getting accepted to one school, and you may very happily go to that one school. So, because you don't have a lot of options and you want to become a doctor. So, again, the question of whether you visit or not is a very individual one, and it really is based on the practicality and economics of it. But I think that it is important when you're down to one or two schools to have visited, because I don't think you would buy a condo or a house for $200,000 without seeing it, and you wouldn't buy a car without seeing it either. So at some point, admittedly, going to a dealership is virtually free, but I don't, I think that given the investment you're going to be making, certainly before you actually sign on, a visit would be advisable. So step one is determining your goal. Step two is researching the schools that support your goal. And step three is determining step one and step two have really been all about what you want, right? What do you want to do post-degree? And what are the schools that are going to help you do it that are most appropriate given your degree goal? And it would be wonderful if this process was just about what you want and your future. But, of course, it's not. It's also about what the schools want. And that's going to be very much step three. For step three, we're going to switch gears. The first two steps have focused on the past, on the future, rather. And that's what you want for your future, both in terms of post-degree goal and then in terms of the school itself. The step three, though, is about your qualifications. And your qualifications are usually presented in terms of your past. Now you need to consider what the schools want in applicants or in their students. To be an effective applicant, you want to apply to schools that support your goals and are likely to accept you based on your qualifications. So now you need to examine what you've done to date, what you've done in the past, to evaluate your qualifications. If you apply exclusively to schools where you are not competitive, in other words, just where you want to go, you are probably wasting time and money, and you probably will be rejected. And in that case, you would need to either improve your qualifications or to change the schools you are targeting. What are some of the qualifications school look for? Well, obviously academics are important. The test scores, whether it's the MCAT, the LSAT, the GMAT, GRE, or the GRE for academic degrees, you can look at your score and compare it to the averages, maybe the 25 to 75th percentile for accepted students. It's always an important element in the admissions process. It is not the only one. It might be that academics are primary, but in law school, medical school, but they're never looked at entirely in a vacuum. So there's that. And your test score is usually looked at in combination with your grades. This is particularly true of business school. There you also can have extras like additional degrees, certifications, post-bac classes, perhaps a post-bac degree, master's degree. And perhaps somewhere along the line, particularly as an undergrad, your grades were something less than what you had wanted. In that case, you should provide the Graduate Admissions Committee with information about the circumstances that contributed to those low grades. Context is king for understanding a drop in grades or less than optimal grades at a particular point in time. And your goal should be to show that circumstances have changed and are no longer affecting your performance. So what do I mean by that? If you were sick one semester and your grades dropped, and the minute your health recovered, your grades went back up, well, that would be evidence that the drop in grades isn't really a reflection of your ability as much as the fact that you had a serious illness that you were dealing with. And the same could be true of a family situation, or if you can say, you know, I had really poor grades my first two years of college. I was immature. My grades went up my junior, senior year. I got a certificate in XYZ, or I took the CPA, or I don't know, what else, or I went for a specialized master's program in the medical arena, and I did really well there. There again, you can argue that those first 2 years of undergraduate grades simply reflected immaturity and not your true ability and capability. Many of you will be applying straight from college, in which case your part-time jobs, summer internships, etc. will play a role. Many of you will be applying after working for a couple of years. And if you have been out in the job market, the schools will want to know what you've been doing. They will want to know the impact that you've had, the difference you've made. For business schools, they're going to want to see above-average progression, top business schools, and they usually want to see 3 to 6 years of work experience. Again, for the other graduate professions, work experience is not usually required. Law school might be changing a little bit in that regard, but again, they don't expect anything like 3 to 6 years. In terms of quality of experience, whether you're talking about internships or full-time work experience, the schools are going to want to see a growth and progression in terms of responsibility. They're going to want you to show leadership on and off the job. They're going to want to see that you've assumed responsibility and been entrusted with responsibility. And they're going to want to see how you've made a difference. What about community service? Many of you, especially if you are currently in college or recently graduated from college, community service gives you a fantastic opportunity to show desirable personal qualities that is very hard to show if you were flipping hamburgers or if you're simply junior man or woman on the totem pole in an entry-level position. What are those desirable personal qualities? And this is really true of all graduate studies. Graduate schools like to see leadership. They like to see that you've handled responsibility and, again, been entrusted responsibility. They want to see initiative, and they want to see teamwork. Teamwork is particularly important, business school and medical school. And finally, schools will want to see what I call the why admit you quality. What will you add to the class? And this is hard to address since you don't know your competition. It's easier if you've come from a non-traditional background or underrepresented group and still present impressive credentials and an appropriate goal. It's harder for those coming from overrepresented groups. Whether you're underrepresented or overrepresented, don't be cocky based on your academic stats alone. Would be as objective and realistic as you can be. I also want to point out if you are applying, especially to business schools, but this would be true if you're a bio major applying to medical school or the poli-sci major or English major applying to law school. Don't focus on what you're most likely to have in common with every other applicant. Draw on specifics in your background and in your perception of events, your perspective on events. The specifics will differentiate you and help you present that why admit me aspect. Your non-professional interests may also be distinctive and distinguishing. Distinctive experiences that you may have had. These all can help to individuate and present you as a unique individual with a distinctive personality that really, really will add to a class. Now, let's go through the steps again of the accepted positioning system. First, determine your post-degree goal. That's number one. Step number two, research the schools that support that goal and determine which schools. Yeah, do keep your qualifications in mind, but really now you're focusing on which schools are going to help you achieve your goal. And step three, which are the schools likely to want you based on an evaluation of your qualifications? Step four, it all comes together. You choose your target programs, and what you want to have is an overlap between your goals and, in other words, the schools likely to help you achieve your goals and the schools likely to want you. So when I gave this as a webinar, it was a slide, but I'd like you to imagine for a moment a circle, a Venn diagram, with the schools that you want to attend because they support your goals and the schools likely to want you. There has to be overlap between those two circles in that Venn diagram, and the schools that you should apply to are in the area of intersection. This is the secret sauce of a successful graduate school application. And the other element, as I mentioned earlier, is presenting yourself well in the application, but we're not going to deal with that, as I said then. And you want to end up with a list of schools that support your goals and that you're likely to get accepted to. Now, that list, the number of schools on that list will depend on, well, it could vary tremendously depending upon the specialty that you're applying to and the acceptance rates. If you apply to fewer schools, I suggest you apply more conservatively and limit your choice to those where you are more likely to gain acceptance. If you want to apply to schools where acceptance is less likely, you need to apply to more programs, and you still need to include at least some programs where chances are better. You can also consider, especially if you're a business school applicant, applying to higher-risk programs round one and then applying more cautiously round two if you aren't accepted round one. I don't think this works for the other specialties because most of them are enrolling admissions. The key point here I'm trying to make is be realistic. It's great to say Harvard supports my goals, I want to go to Harvard. But if you don't have the qualifications, you're unlikely to get in. Applying to the appropriate programs is the route to acceptance. Again, it's the secret to acceptance, the foundation of a successful graduate school application. Guided by self-knowledge, school research, and a clear understanding of your professional educational goals, as well as your qualifications, you can choose the best schools for you to apply to. Essentially, you make your own rankings. And that's the secret. That's how you need to choose schools, by making your own rankings. I'm going to repeat one more time the accepted positioning system, the four key steps. One, determine your post-degree goals. Two, research the schools that support those goals. Three, evaluate your own qualifications to determine which schools that support your goals are also likely to, which schools that support your goals are you likely to be accepted to. When you take the universe of schools that support your goals and schools you would like to attend and you have overlap, that overlap represents what you want to be doing. When you have that overlap, that when you have the two circles overlapping again in my imaginary Venn diagram, that is where you want to apply. For more advice on applying to graduate school, just go to www.accept.com. Also, please remember to register for your upcoming Med and MBA webinars. And again, I'll include links in the show notes to those webinar registration pages. Listeners, thank you for joining me today for our 58th episode. If you found this episode worthwhile, please share the good word. We have made it really easy for you to do so. Just go to info.accepted.com/love. There is a pre-populated tweet that you can send to your Twitter followers or copy and paste it into a Facebook or LinkedIn update. Thanks in advance for doing so. And if you have a question you would like answered or you want to provide feedback directly to me, please do so at info.accepted.com/58 and scroll down to the image with a mic. You can leave an audio message there by clicking on that mic from your computer, tablet, or phone. Alternatively, send an email to questions@accepted.com. I'll select questions that I think are relevant to our listeners and answer them if I can. If not, I might ask somebody else to answer them. Finally, if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk produced by Accept.com, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by PodcastThemes.com.